Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Talking Business, a podcast produced in Melbourne, Australia. The podcast is available on the Acast app, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you go to get your podcasts. Or you can get it at the Business Acumen website at www.businessacumen.biz. I am Leon Gettler. My job is to review and monitor the week's news in business, finance and economics. I bring it all to you every week. This is episode number 4 in our series for 2021, and today's date is Friday, February the 26th. First, I'll be talking to Colin Hewitt, the founder and CEO of Float, a Scottish accounting software startup that opened an office in Sydney in 2019, and he will talk about the lessons businesses can learn from managing finances during so much uncertainty. And I'll be talking to Indeed economist Callum Pickering about the latest unemployment figures. But now, let's talk to Colin Hewitt. Colin, there are enormous cash flow implications for businesses with post-COVID government support, such as JobKeeper, and that's right around the world. What are the cash flow implications?
Yeah, I think businesses are struggling to plan, you know, to understand what needs they're going to have, especially around their staff. And JobKeeper is obviously one of the solutions is trying to give some stability there. But obviously, as companies are now starting to wonder how long that's going to be in place for, they're starting to have to make decisions, and that starts getting into the need to look at various scenarios as to what they can afford and multiple what-if paths that they need to plan for. It's quite a big deal for many businesses.
So there's quite a lot of scenario planning.
Absolutely. We've seen a huge surge in demand in our product from accountants and bookkeepers who are, you know, needing to do this en masse for maybe 50 to 100 of their clients because they're all asking the same question. What happens if the JobKeeper scheme runs to an end? We have a similar scheme in the UK, and also in the US. So basically, planning for those scenarios, bringing people back, putting them back on the payroll, and also looking at depleted sales and very uncertain sales over the next period. There's lots of moving parts at the moment.
Have you ever seen anything like this before?
I've never seen anything like this before. No, I was speaking to somebody yesterday in hospitality industry. They were saying that, you know, they thought that people were always going to have to go to bars and restaurants. So they've always said that they were fine. And obviously.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast. And this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Generally, that's true. People will always want to go out and eat and they'll want to socialize, but this is the one situation where that's not possible. So yeah, it's a strange time, and it's nice in the UK. We're starting to see. I went out yesterday to pick up some groceries and saw people sitting in some bars and restaurants, and it's definitely you know, heartening to see that happen again. But how long for, we're just not sure.
And there'll be huge cash flow and accounting issues for national businesses, wouldn't it, with the economic impact of COVID-19, because it's so widely spread. But at the same time, it's so widely spread, but different regions, different states, different towns, different cities are feeling the impact differently. So what are the cash flow and accounting implications of that for businesses?
Yeah, well, I can't speak too much to the accounting implications, but certainly from a cash flow point of view, you know, we're seeing that people are starting to have to think running different promotions in different parts. If you're business to business, you know that your customers are struggling as well, very likely. So we're seeing lots of initiatives like people saying, look, we're not going to charge you for the next couple of months, or we're going to give you seriously reduced rates to give you a chance to survive as a business so you can still be our customer. And, you know, that will need to be, those schemes will need to be rolled out in differently for different locations, because, you know, everybody's going through different things. So, you know, for example, we're rolling out a promotion for businesses in Victoria at the moment, because they've gone into this local lockdown again. So we really want to help. And so therefore we've been doing promotions on float to give them access to float with for a period of time so that they can actually get through this. So I think you really need to come together as a leadership team and get the strategy right for what you're doing. And that is changing on a pretty regular basis. So it's all go.
And it would be particularly difficult because it's varying from city to city and region to region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, more than ever now, we're seeing a need for businesses to get their financial reporting cycle in a much faster loop from when they're taking their and recording their sales and their expenses, getting those plugged into their accounting software and getting real-time cash flow reporting out almost as soon as they can, because things are changing so fast. So traditionally, what we've had is you've had spreadsheets which have had forecasts that are made up of maybe 12 to 24 months. And then you've had your accounting data management accounting, which is sitting somewhere else. And really we're seeing the opportunity for those to come together. So the management accounts are impacting the forecasts in real time, and people can actually start to make faster responses.
The issue is the cycle has to speed up.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly, and it's exciting, I think, to be part of the industry in this time, because, you know, that just opens up a lot more possibilities for so many more businesses. You know, instead of having a financial report that many business owners don't understand hit their desk, you know, a couple of months out of date, what they can now expect is, if they're using the tools available to them, they're getting management information almost, you know, to the day. And that's able to then inform their forecasts. And that's what, you know, that's the system that we're in. And that's happened through banking becoming more widely accessible online. Tools like Receipt Bank and HubDoc, for as soon as you get an invoice now, that shouldn't sit on a desk for, you know, 24 hours. That should be straight into the accounting software. That then can be informing your cash flow, because you're seeing what's happening. And also what we allow people to do is to set realistic expected payment dates on when all their receivables are likely to get paid. So they're then able to get a very accurate prediction of what's their cash position going to be at the end of the week or the month.
I'd imagine the technology would also particularly help for businesses that are catering for global markets as well. Would that be right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we're probably more in the SME space ourselves. So we focus on businesses that are generally, you know, maybe 10 to 50 people. But yeah, certainly, you know, we've just opened we're in the UK, we've opened our Australia office. So we're, you know, now thinking of ourselves in a more global context. And, you know, having that real-time information is absolutely critical for, you know, for that, to get that management and make decisions. You know, we need to know what's happening in the Australia office to be able to work out if we're sending money over there or we're transferring, you know, between bank accounts. That becomes huge. And services like TransferWise also make that much more realistic and much more exciting as well, because we can, you know, you're avoiding the fees. So the cash flow issues internationally now are becoming much less of an issue.
And the technology just facilitates all of that, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So we try to model it as much as we can as in our own business. We're using solutions like TransferWise. We've implemented a tool called Saldo recently for employee expense reporting. And again, that because that's not sitting in, you know, receipts in people's pockets for months waiting to be submitted. That's actually coming through live as they make their payments on their card. So, yeah, it's really great to be able just to start to see everything come together.
Now, how should companies assess COVID-19 events after the reporting period?
You're talking about the reporting period in Australia?
In Australia.
Yeah. I think, you know, we're all going to have to take a look at this and see, try and assess, get a realistic assessment of where things are at from, you know, what how much of the business has been affected. Because sometimes there'll be things that, you know, maybe the business is suffering and it's not just related to COVID, maybe there's other issues. But, you know, we're trying to ascertain in the period, like what the impact has been. And I think if we can do that, and obviously we're not out of this yet. So I think that's going to be, you know, getting the advice of a trusted, good accountant that's going to really help you. That I think that's our biggest recommendation is, you know, where there's people much smarter than I am that are trying to bring some analysis into this. And also I've seen some of my data from Xero, which is showing the kind of impact that it's having across different sectors. So certainly being able to apply that information to your forecast for the next financial year, there's a lot of really good data starting to emerge about how to sort of look at that from that side of things.
And will the uptake of digital accounting make businesses more robust and capable of dealing with, say, something like another COVID-related economic downturn? Because there will be more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's just absolutely critical now that businesses have that real-time dashboard of what is happening in their business. And, you know, using these tools, like I was saying, the data capture tools, the online banking, the accounting software, and then the reporting and forecasting software that's available, you know, this is going to absolutely help to know your tax liability, be able to understand, you know, which clients are not paying and how much cash you're sitting on that, you know, is receivable. So all of that information is really there to help come together and make better forecasts and predictions, which, you know, we think that having the accounting software at the core of that is absolutely essential.
Well, we'll be watching that with great interest and good on Float. That's fantastic.
Thanks, Leon. Good to chat to you.
Thank you.
And now let's talk to Indeed economist Callum Pickering.
Well, Callum Pickering, we had the jobs figures out this week and we've gone down from 6.6% to 6.4%, but it looks very complicated. What's your view about that?
Yeah, so at first glance, it certainly looked as though it was a pretty strong jobs report. Employment increased by 29,000, which is pretty good at this point in the recovery. As you said, the unemployment rate declined. Broader measures such as the underemployment rate also fell to a two-year low. But there were a couple of small concerns. The major one was that growth in January was largely concentrated in Victoria. In fact, if you exclude Victoria, employment actually fell across the rest of the country. And what that indicates is that growth in January was driven by the reopening of the Victorian economy, and that there really isn't much momentum across the rest of the country. So that's going to be something that we really need to keep an eye on, because if that continues, it is likely that employment growth across the country, including Victoria, is going to slow in the coming months.
And, of course, Victoria will come off of the momentum of reopening, won't it?
Yeah, that's right. You can't rely on that as a source of growth for very long. The Victorian economy opened up in November. We've seen strong employment growth over the past 3 months. It is likely that that impact will diminish in the next month or two. So we really do need to see a pickup in momentum across the rest of the country for our recovery to continue at its current pace.
And hours worked also dropped, didn't it?
Yeah, this was an interesting one. So hours worked fell by 4.9%, which ordinarily is something that we would be very concerned about. But the ABS indicated that it does appear as though a larger than normal number of Australians took vacation during January. It's obviously been a stressful and frustrating year, so it's certainly understandable that more people than normal took some time off. And so I don't necessarily think that's something that we should be concerned about right now. And I would expect that hours work would rebound quite strongly when the February data comes out next month.
The unemployment was very high among young people.
Yeah, that's right. As the recovery has progressed, it's become clear that the impact is being felt the most by younger people. So employment for those aged 15 to 24 is still down around 5% from its peak. And that compares to a 0.5% decline from its peak for Australia as a whole. So the impact has been much greater there. We're also seeing a much bigger impact for those aged 25 to 34. Employment for that group's down by around 2%. This is going to be really important as we sort of, as the recovery progresses, because what history tells us with recessions and downturns such as the global financial crisis is that the impact upon younger people can persist for a number of years, and certainly much longer than it does for the rest of the population. And certainly at this stage in our recovery, it appears as though that is the case for the COVID-19 crisis as well.
And that could continue for some time, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Past recessions and downturns indicate that it can take a number of years for employment among younger people to get back to where it was pre-recession or downturn. And I think from a policy standpoint, policymakers such as the federal government, state governments, need to be acutely aware of this. And they should be targeting younger people when they look at policies to improve jobs growth. It's going to be really important for us over the next couple of years.
Now, basically, the figures, as I understand, show that 90% of the jobs are back, but that would indicate there aren't any new jobs in the on the pipeline.
Well, we're slowly getting back to where we were. The Reserve Bank expects that employment will exceed its previous peak at some point this year. I think it's possible that we might get there by mid-year. But, yeah, so far employment is still 64,000 people below where it was in February last year. So while we have made a lot of progress and the recovery has actually gone faster than anticipated, it is true that the economy itself is smaller than it was a year ago, and we still have a fair way to go before we get back to where we were.
Another issue too is that there's pressure on the government regarding JobKeeper, and what do these figures say about the future of JobKeeper?
The overall data does suggest the economy is much better placed to absorb the impact of removing JobKeeper and JobSeeker than it was even a few months ago. And the labour market is stronger today than it was, a couple of months ago. But there are some concerns about removing these policies. The economy has been relying on these policies to keep the economy ticking over for the past 12 months, and it's been particularly important for smaller businesses. And it's been particularly important for workers in certain industries, such as hospitality, arts and recreation, industries of that nature. So when these policies are removed, it's likely to be highly disruptive and challenging for smaller businesses and certain industries across the country. And what that could do from an employment standpoint is that it could cause the recovery to slow, or potentially it could cause unemployment to rise. Now, we really don't know what the impact will be, largely because we've never been in a situation where we've pulled so much government money out of an economy at one time. And we don't know the true extent to which businesses, particularly small businesses, are relying on these policies to keep afloat. So it's going to be an interesting few months, and I suspect that the employment figures could be highly volatile throughout the removal of these policies.
Because one of the predictions is that when you remove JobKeeper, we're going to have a surge in insolvencies.
Yeah, that's the expectation. As I said, we really don't truly understand what the impact is going to be. There's a high degree of uncertainty surrounding this. But the belief is that there are a lot of zombie businesses out there that would be dead if not for JobKeeper. And as we remove that policy, we're going to get a much firmer idea whether that's the case or not.
Now, do the jobs figures indicate any particular sectors coming out better than others?
Not at the moment. The January data didn't include an update from an industry standpoint. We'll actually have to wait to next month for an industry-style breakdown. Generally speaking, I mean, as we look at the recovery over the past 6 months, most industries have improved considerably. That's through to November, so that's a little bit dated. There are a couple of industries that continue to be quite week from a job standpoint, and hospitality is the key one there. Accommodation and food services has been the industry that has been the hardest hit by COVID-19, and that appears to still be the case, whether we're looking at employment data or whether we're looking at things such as job vacancies or job postings online. So while most sectors have come back pretty strongly, heading in a positive direction, there are still a couple that are lagging behind.
I would imagine that tourism would be one of those also.
Tourism is definitely one of those, yep.
And so what are the figures in terms of part-time and full-time work?
So one of the positives of the recovery over the past 4 months has been this shift towards more full-time job creation. So full-time employment increased by 59,000 people in January, which was twice the national rate of 29,000 people. Over the past 4 months, full-time employment has increased by almost 280,000 people. So that's a really positive step in the recovery. Early in the recovery, almost all the jobs that were coming back were of the part-time variety. And there was also this phenomenon of people who were formerly working full-time jobs suddenly forced into part-time work because there wasn't enough demand to justify employing them full-time. That it does appear to have shifted in recent months. So it's a big positive so far, and certainly something that we hope continues over the next few months.
Now, in terms of wages growth, it still is abysmally low, and we would need to have an unemployment figure with a 4 in front of it, wouldn't it, till we can see wages growth increasing. How far off are we from that?
Well, I mean, the unemployment rate's at 6.4%, the underemployment rate's at 8.1%, which puts the underutilisation rate at 14.5%. That's exceedingly high by historical standards, and that's consistent with a long-term wage growth of below 2%. Now, where we want wage growth is closer to 3%. That is the sweet spot that would push inflation back towards the RBA's target. And realistically, the unemployment rate is going to need to get below 5%, probably closer to 4.5%, before we have a strong enough labour market to facilitate that sort of wage growth. Realistically, we are still at least several years away from achieving that. And of course, wage growth of that nature hasn't been something that we've achieved over the past 6 years. So this is not something that will be easy for policymakers to facilitate. But that's where we need to get to.
So this could be several years away till we have a reasonably low unemployment rate.
Yeah, that's the expectation. That's certainly what policymakers such as the Reserve Bank are telling us. I mean, they don't expect inflation to return to its target for the next 3 years. They don't anticipate increasing the cash rate over that period of time, which basically means that they expect the unemployment rate to remain at a relatively high level over that period. But as I said, you need to get well below 5% in order to facilitate the wage growth that we're looking for. And that's still a long way to go yet.
Well, Callum, that's all very interesting. And thank you very much for your time.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
So what's happening in the news? Well, embattled casino giant Crown Resorts is facing full-scale inquiries in two states after Victoria said it would launch a royal commission into the James Packer-backed gambling company. Former federal court judge Raymond Finkelstein QC will run the six-month investigation into Crown and assess the suitability of the gambling giant to hold its Victorian casino licence in light of the serious findings from New South Wales. In the wake of the Bergen report in New South Wales, which found Crown unsuitable to hold a licence at its freshly built Barangaroo Tower in Sydney, the $6.9 billion company is now also battling to keep hold of the licences for its casinos in Melbourne and Perth. Western Australian authorities launched their own inquiry last week. The latest regulatory push came as long-time Packer family friend and advertising veteran Harold Mitchell quit the Crown board. He'd been urged to reflect on his directorship, held since 2011 by Commissioner Patricia Bergen, SC, when her report came out last Tuesday. Mr. Mitchell's departure makes four directors who have left since the Bergen report dropped, along with Andrew Demetrio, Guy Jalland, and Michael Johnson. Chairman Helen Coonan was last week elevated to executive chairman after Chief Executive Ken Barton also resigned. And Australia's job market will shrink by 11% by 2030 due to the rise of increasingly capable automation technology, knocking 1.5 million people out of work and stranding a million beyond the digital divide, a new study by global technology research firm Forrester has warned. The study follows the progress of the effects of automation on different types of employment, encompassing nearly 400 occupations tracked by the Australian Bureau of Statistics. It highlights numerous roles, such as office cubicle administration, that it says will drop by half, while showing the emergence of greater demand for some knowledge workers, digital specialists, and human touch workers. Forrester's report groups 391 occupations into 12 different so-called automation personas, saying jobs in the same category will be affected similarly by automation over time. It found that as well as changing roles, the workforce structure will change also, with as many as 1 in 3 workers moving to the contingent labour force, taking side gigs from online marketplaces. Unsurprisingly, a cohort known as digital elites is expected to grow in size significantly, with a 25% increase in the number of roles created. Data scientists are one example raised by Forrester, with software and app developers, network and systems administrators, mathematicians, and information security specialists in demand. And the Bank of Queensland is vying to take on the Big Four after confirming it will buy ME Bank for $1.3 billion. The deal will create a bank with $88 billion in assets and nearly 1.5 million customers. On Monday, the bank confirmed the 100% purchase of ME Bank and said it would fund this via a $1.3 billion equity raising. ME was founded 27 years ago by a group of Australian super funds and pitches itself as an alternative to the traditional banks for everyday Australians. Its biggest sources of revenue is home loans, which it relies largely on mortgage brokers to facilitate. And a registered Aboriginal heritage site has been damaged at one of BHP's Pilbara iron ore mines, despite the major miner pledging in June to consult with traditional owners before disturbing sites in the area. In late January, a culturally significant rock shelter was impacted at BHP's Mining Area C project in the Pilbara, causing a rockfall at the site. It is understood neither BHP or the Banjima people are clear on what caused the damage. Mining Area C is adjacent to BHP's US $3.06 billion, that's Aussie $4 billion, South Flank project, which is under construction and will be the largest iron ore mining and processing facility ever built in Western Australia. It is located on Banjima's traditional lands in Western Australia's Pilbara region, 130 kilometres northwest of Newman. The news comes almost a year after fellow Pilbara miner Rio Tinto drew international condemnation when it destroyed 46,000-year-old Aboriginal rock shelters while blasting at the Juukan Gorge in the same region. The destruction of Juukan went against the wishes of the traditional owners, the Putu, Kunti, Kurama and Pinukara people, shocked investors, forced the resignation of former Chief Executive Jean Sebastian Jacques and two of his deputies, and sparked the federal parliamentary inquiry. And Facebook has agreed to restore Australian news on its platform in the coming days, following an agreement with the government on amendments to a proposed law that would force big tech to pay for news. The world's largest social media company said on Tuesday it was satisfied that a number of changes and guarantees it had agreed with Canberra addressed its concerns over the bill. The proposed law is being debated in Parliament and could become a model for other governments' efforts to reframe the relationship between dominant tech platforms and the media. Facebook had argued that the legislation fundamentally misunderstood its interaction with publishers and penalised the company for content it didn't take or ask for. It abruptly blocked the sharing of news in the country altogether last week, causing a public backlash after access to critical emergency services and health pages was cut off. The changes could give Facebook and Google, the companies most vulnerable to the code, more flexibility to escape the most stringent aspects of it. For example, authorities would have to consider whether a company had made a significant contribution to the news industry by reaching commercial deals with media businesses. The contentious final arbitration model contained in the code will be stipulated as a last resort when commercial deals cannot be reached. And GrowCon Chief Executive Daniel Grollo, along with all executives, have been made redundant as part of the latest wave of administrations at the troubled building giant. The departure of Mr. Grollo ends a chain of members of the Grollo family started by CEO Luigi Grollo. The move comes as Mr. Grollo's luxury sub-penthouse in the Eureka Tower is now on the chopping block after the construction CEO placed 45 more corporate entities into administration on Monday. Mr. Grollo was among 20 staff who were made redundant 2 weeks ago before the announcement made on Monday that 45 additional GrowCon corporate entities would be placed into administration. Cordamentha Restructuring has been handling the administration of the 42 corporate entities and will now combine the additional 45 into a joint administration. Monday's move widens the collapse to 87 GrowCon corporate entities, capturing major companies that had so far avoided the precipice. And as many as 5 coal-fired power stations will be running at a loss by 2025, and at least one faces early closure as the ageing generators struggle to compete against cheaper renewables surging into the national power grid, say researchers. New South Wales' largest coal-fired power plant, Origin Energy's Eraring, on the shore of Lake Macquarie, is headed for the biggest loss by 2025, followed by Mount Piper and Vales Point B if electricity prices stay at 2020 levels for the next 5 years. The Gladstone Power Station in Queensland, part owned by Rio Tinto, and Energy Australia's Yallourn W in Victoria, will tip into loss-making territory if power prices dip even lower than 2015 levels. At least one power station is likely to face closure several years sooner than planned, say the researchers from think tank, the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis and Green Energy Markets. This comes as the National Party pushes for the Commonwealth's Green Bank, the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, to fund coal and gas power plants. And the profit reporting season continues. Reliance Worldwide reported a 12.8% increase in revenue to $642.4 million, while net profits soared 82.4% to $91.4 million. EBITDA rose 32% to $166.3 million. BlueScope reported a first-half net profit after tax of $330.3 million, up 78% from a year ago. Chorus said that first-half net profit reached New Zealand $24 million compared to New Zealand $31 million in the same period a year ago. Operating revenue reached $473 million from $483 million. Costa Group swung to full-year statutory net profit of $60.8 million from a loss of $36.1 million a year ago. Profit from ordinary activities rose 295.9% to $67.4 million. Lendlease reported a 29.6% fall in revenue to $55.2 billion, while net profit slid 37.4% to $196 million. Ordnance swung to a loss of $1.3 million from a profit of $312,000 a year ago. Revenue dipped to $15.4 million from $16.1 million, hurt by a strengthening Australian dollar. Insurance services business PSC Insurance Group has posted a $13.6 million after-tax profit for the first half of 2021 financial year, a 55% increase on the first half of fiscal 2020. NIB Holdings revenue was steady at $1.3 billion, while net profit climbed 16% to $66.3 million. Group claims expenses rose 0.9% to $1 billion. Listed investment company WAM Global's first half net profit rose 80% to $49 million. MACA reported a first half net profit of $11.6 million, down 3% from a year ago. All Media swung to a full year loss of $35.7 million from a profit of $13.7 million a year ago. Online bookseller Booktopia increased its 2021 sales and earnings forecast despite posting a $19.8 million loss for the December half. The loss included one-off costs of $4.1 million associated with its $25 million initial public offering in December and costs of $18.6 million for the conversion of preference shares. Westgold Resources posted $301.8 million revenue in the 6 months to December 31, a 32% increase on $228.9 million effort for the first 6 months of the 2020 financial year. The company's after-tax profit jumped 390% to $47.5 million. 3P Learning's net loss has widened to $1.9 million on sales up 3% to $24 million for the half year, December 31, 2020. Tyro reported a record positive earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization, or EBITDA, of $8.5 million and a statutory net loss after tax of $3.4 million, an 82% improvement. Medicinal cannabis company Can Group reported revenue from sales of $1.08 million for the 6 months to December 31, 2020, compared with $570,000 a year before. Its operating loss widened in the period to $9.4 million from an $8.4 million loss a year ago. Ampol posted a full-year loss of $485 million, mainly due to coronavirus restrictions limiting travel. Parenti reported a first-half net statutory loss after tax of $63.8 million from a profit of $38.2 million last year. Underlying net profit after tax was $44.6 million, down from $60.1 million a year ago. New Zealand broadcaster Sky Network has more than tripled its net profit to $39.6 million on sales of $356.9 million for the half-year to December 31, 2020. Hub24's revenue rose 18.9% to $64.1 million, while net profit climbed 1.4% to $6.1 million. Online trading platform hipages has posted a statutory net loss of $5.9 million for the half year to December 31, 2020, but said its pro forma or adjusted net profit of $1.5 million beat expectations as revenue growth and cost savings boosted margins. Insurance broker network owner AUB Group's revenue rose 3.1% in the first half of fiscal 2021 to $168 million, while its after-tax profit jumped 44.5% to $24 million. National Storage REIT's revenue rose 14% to $99.6 million, while net profit slid 33% to $101.4 million. Illumina reported a statutory full-year net profit after tax of US$146.6 million, down 31% from a year ago. Gas Pipelines owner APA Group has posted an $11.7 million after-tax loss in the first half of fiscal 2021 due to a $249.3 million non-cash impairment recognised against the Orbost gas processing plant. Ramelius Resources revenue soared 116% to $342.2 million, while EBITDA climbed 193% to $192.8 million. Net profit after-tax rose 297% to $81.3 million. Online beauty retailer Adore Beauty appears on track to beat its full-year prospectus forecast after delivering a 180% increase in net profit to $2.5 million for the December half, buoyed by sales of at-home beauty products. Underlying earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization soared 188% to $5.2 million, exceeding interim prospect forecasts of $3.3 million. Monadelphous has delivered an 11% increase in interim net profit to $31.6 million. Aged care provider Estia Health, whose Melbourne homes have been the centre of major virus outbreaks, reported a loss after tax of $5.3 million for the first half of fiscal 2021, reflecting the impact of COVID-19 and the ongoing funding and financing challenges of residential aged care. Superloop narrowed its first half net loss to $18.9 million from $21.4 million a year ago. PolyNovo's revenue rose 24% to $12.6 million. However, it still recorded a loss after tax of $3.5 million. Asset manager VGI Partners has reported full-year net profit down 7% to $25.9 million on revenue of $56.8 million. Worley's revenue slid 29.3% in the first 6 months of the new financial year, while net profit slid 61.1% to $60.1 million. Spirit Technology Solutions, previously known as Spirit Telecom, turned a first-half net profit of $500,000 and reported revenue more than tripled to $44 million. Online jobs marketplace Freelancer has narrowed its full-year net loss for 2020 to $646,000 versus $1.5 million in 2019. Nickel miner Mercenaries has reported net loss down 148% to $12 million, on sales down 21% to $122.7 million for the half year ended December 31, 2020. Online retail marketplace MyDeal.com.au Limited swung to a first half loss of $2.3 million from a profit of $0.8 million and revenue more than tripled to $21.2 million. Oil Search reported full-year net loss after tax of US$320.7 million from a profit of $312.4 million a year ago. Sleep treatment business SomnoMed has reported net profit down $274,859 to $491,571 on sales down 7% to $30.8 million. Gold miner Silver Lake Resources' statutory after-tax profit rose 48% to $65.8 million. Gold miner Perseus Mining reported its first-half profit rose 21.3% to $36.1 million after revenue rose 4.5% to $386.7 million. Medibank Private's first half net profit rose 27% to $226.4 million. Accent Group's revenue rose 55.3% to $478.1 million, while profit climbed 57.3% to $52.8 million. Steadfast Group's revenue rose 8% to $378.6 million, while its net profit climbed to $73.4 million. Centre Group swung to a full-year loss of $3.8 billion from a profit of $1.2 billion a year ago. Nine Entertainment reported a 2% fall in revenue to $1.16 billion, while net profit soared 79% to $182 million. Ethical Fund Manager Australian Ethical Investments' underlying net profit after tax was $4.9 million on operating revenue up 10% to $25.9 million for the half year to December 31, 2020. Appen said that full year profit rose 21.4% to $50.5 million after revenue increased 11.9% to $599.9 million. Sydney Airport reported a loss of $145.6 million. Woolworths' revenue climbed 10.6% to $35.8 billion, while profits soared 28% to $1.1 billion. Nanosonics reported a first half net profit of $1.46 million, down 74% compared to a year ago. Vitamins business Blackmores has reported a half year profit down 3.7% to $18.9 million on sales down 3.1% to $302.6 million. Regis Healthcare said the first half net profit declined 9% to $11 million after revenue increased 6.3% to $353.1 million. Mayne Pharma swung to a $181.3 million loss for the first half. SeaLink Travel reported first half statutory net profit after tax of $32 million, up 266.4% compared to a year ago. Bega Cheese reported a 154% increase in first half net profit to $21.7 million after revenue dipped 4.5% to $707.7 million. IOOF Holdings net profit slid 52.7% to $54.4 million. Monash IVF has guided to full-year reported net profit of $23.7 million to $25.7 million over the $11.8 million of 2019-20. And that's it for this week. And next week I'll be talking to Matt Nguyen, policy lead at Reset Australia, who is concerned about the amendments to the Medium Bargaining Code the government brought in to get Facebook on board. And I'll be talking to economist Nicholas Gruen, analysing whether Jacinta Ardern's well-being budget actually works. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at TalkingBizBLZ, on Facebook and on LinkedIn. And if you want, leave a comment. Wishing you all a safe and healthy week, and looking forward to bringing Talking Business next week.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.